Okay, I welcome all of you for Sutta teaching session. We are discussing several suttas in this session. Basically, to understand Buddha's teaching as well as to get some support from it, especially for our practice. And so far we have discussed several suttas. We started with Sabbasava Sutta, which is talking about the hidden tendencies or latent tendencies on which we are basically operating, and Buddha is showing various paths or various techniques, strategies to overcome them and to understand them. So we discuss this, and then we get on to Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, that is related to the elements, and there Buddha is giving various explanations about our whole experience, what we call as a person, a being, a man, a woman. Buddha is giving different views about that, and accordingly we have discussed different such understandings or such insights, and they are basically we ended up with understanding that going through the practice, one has to establish oneself in wisdom. And one has to be, vigilant in that. One has to work hard on to develop that wisdom, and then one should recognize various insights, and those insights are to be considered as the true states rather than the typical transient impermanent states. And again, one has to relinquish what we call as I, me, mine. Those kind of inner traits one has to recognize and ignore, recognize and let go. And then one has to protect the peace of the mind, the tranquility, which is free from lust, free from hatred, and free from delusion. So we discuss fair amount of practice-related suttas, and now we are discussing Mula Pariyaya Sutta, where Buddha is talking about the root of all things. Now, root of all things, we are basically when we consider the whole thinking paradigm, how we perceive things, how we think about various things, what are the prejudices we have, and why we are thinking like that. So these kind of different viewpoints, these kind of various preconceived ideas are all related to some sort of thinking patterns among all of us. So therefore Buddha analyzes this whole tendency to which all the people, not only the human, but even the celestial beings, even the Brahmas, and all the beings, all sentient beings, are included here. So in order to give a proper understanding, Buddha is taking 24 concepts. And those are actually representing various samples or cross-sections of the whole society, of the whole universe. Taking earth element, water element, fire element, air element. So those are the most primary characteristics or most primary elements of the whole physical world. So he is taking those four and telling us what is the perspective about those to different people, various kinds of people. And then beings, there we can consider the hell beings and the human beings. So what is their understanding about various things? And then gods, various celestial beings, what is their sort of an understanding? And then who is the creator god of the universe? That is according to the belief of the Brahmins. So they consider Prajapati, the Brahma, is the creator god. So how one perceives that Brahma. So what is the concept he has? What's the idea? What is the view someone has about this Prajapati? And then various Brahma realms. There are 16 material Brahma realms. And according to the strength of the jhana, so one may be reborn in various Brahma realms. And how one may perceive about those Brahma realms. So that is discussed later. And after that, what are the immaterial Brahma realms? So there are Arupa Brahma realms. And what is the perception about those Arupa Brahma realms? Arupa Brahma realms in a person's mind. And then seen, heard, sense, cognized. So this is how our five faculties are, the six faculties are basically dealing with the outside. And how one perceive when something is seen, when something is heard, when something is sensed, and when a mental construct or when a mental object appearing in the mind, how one may be cognized that. So that is in a way another way of looking at the whole experience according to Ditta, Sutta, Mutta and Vinyata. That is seen, heard, sensed and cognized. And then there are certain other beliefs that one has a self, maybe a kind of a small self, and that self will be united with the larger selves, the big self. So that is one belief among the Brahmins and most of the, say, religions who they consider a creator god. So that is this kind of a belief, and therefore this unity and the diversity and the all are certain concepts coming to the picture because of these various beliefs. And what is the perspective, what is the idea about those beliefs in a typical person? And then even the Nibbana, how a person may perceive about a Nibbana. So what is his idea about Nibbana? Is it a place? Is it a celestial sort of realm or whatever it is? So likewise, Buddha is taking cross-section of many different aspects in the whole universe, and on those aspects, on those experiences, what is the different views in different people's mind. So there Buddha is taking mainly four people. First, he considers the typical untaught ordinary worldly being. So he has never heard Buddha's teaching, he has never thought of any spiritual sort of a paradigm, and he simply is a sensual pressure bound person. He is always looking after some sensual pressure and always trying to get rid of whatever the sufferings, whatever the pain coming on his way. So likewise, he has his own sort of a typical worldly nature, and what is his view about this whole universe. And then Buddha is taking a person who is in higher training. So that is what we need to discuss today. We have to discuss today because we have covered the view of the first person. That is the view of a typical person, an untaught ordinary person, how he perceives something. So basically, he is with the idea that things are permanent, things may last for a long time, and you can find satisfaction, you can find happiness through various outside sources. And there's a self within, maybe within the body, or the body is encompassed by a self or something like that. There's a kind of an ongoing self view. And with those preconceived ideas, he is now trying to understand this whole experience. And therefore, he is in a sort of a confused mind. He's in an entangled mind. So he can simply perceive something according to the typical norms. Say, for example, in this situation, I have taken an example of a person seeing a chair. So he immediately recognized this is as a chair. So it's not a bad thing. I mean, in a way, this is the correct recognition. He hasn't mistaken it to a table, or he hasn't mistaken it to a sort of a vehicle, but he properly recognized this as a chair. So in mundane terms, it is true, it is correct. And then he has sort of a relationship building up with this chair. Now he thinks, I am seeing a chair. So this chair is a good chair. This chair is an expensive chair. I want to have this chair. I like that chair. Or on the other hand, this inferior chair, it may break quickly. I should never buy this kind of a chair. Or this kind of a, many different views may arise in his mind. So therefore, he is having kind of a subject-object relationship, and he consider that I am here, and while being here, I see a outside chair. So he has this kind of a relationship. According to his own views, he has some conditioned relationship with this chair. So now this is simple example. Similarly, we can go for any other material objects or even any other, say, gods, celestial beings, or even Brahmas, Arupa Brahmas, where this person may have read books or heard a Dhamma sermon or heard from someone else. So he has some sort of ideas already available in his mind. So according to those preconceived ideas, so he is thinking, he is conceiving. He is always putting kind of an eye into the picture, and I am understanding about him. I am understanding about this. I am understanding about that. So I better say be afraid of the devil. I better offer some flowers to the devil. Or I first I may buy a chair. I should go to some place to look at something. So likewise, he always interpret all his experience using a preconceived idea that there is an I here, there is a person here, I am experiencing. So this I notion is everywhere included in his whole experience, whole thinking, and all reaction. Now, so this is the typical experience. So Buddha says, why he is thinking like this? Why he is behaving like this? Because he hasn't understood the whole thing. He hasn't understood the whole picture. So his mind is fairly conditioned, and as a result, he is looking at things according to that frame, according to that conditioned mind. So he hasn't have the capacity to look at out of the picture, out of that bound, out of the box. He can't, and he is simply fairly conditioned and restricted to that, his narrow thinking. And as a result, his perception is colored. Now we can discuss the other part, that is where how a disciple who is in higher training. Now suppose there is a person who has heard Buddha's teaching, and he understood there is something there to practically understand. So just the superficial knowledge is not enough. I have heard some Dhamma. So I have read several books. So why not I really try to give it a try? Why not I really try to get a sort of a practical understanding about this? Kind of a self-realization. Kind of my own realization about this teaching. So this teaching appears really rational, fairly wise. And there are other people who are sort of recognize this teaching, has given due recognition to this Buddha's teaching. So why not I also try to recognize it? Or why not I also try to practice it and live according to it? And then I may be able to understand what Buddha is talking. So now he is trying to practice. So this is how a practitioner comes into the picture. Now he may start with basic mindfulness practices. So rather than trying to go for any kind of dogmatic, very confusing or very complicated thinking, he is now trying to simplify his whole experience. Because he understood now the whole world is communicating according to the man-made, say, concepts. Fairly living in a conceptual world. So I should penetrate this. I should have a different way of looking at things. So why not I practice according to the Buddha's teaching? Now, rather than he himself trying to find out his way, now Buddha has preached a certain path. Buddha has taught kind of methodology. So now he is trying to practice according to that methodology, according to that strategy. Now, there he first of all try to be mindful. So basically, he understands that his mind constantly proliferate about the past, regret about the past, has various ideas about others based on their sort of a relationship with me in the past, oh, I have various sort of projections about the future, various uncertainties about the future, various plans about the future. So this is how my mind is fairly subjected to. So how about being in the present? I never have been in the present. So how can I come to the present? What is the present experience? Now he is trying to take his mind to the present experience. Right now my body is sitting. Can I perceive the body in this sitting posture? Maybe now the body is walking. Can I be with this simple walking posture? Now the body is lying down. Can I be with this lying down posture? Now the body is standing. Can I be with this standing posture? So likewise, he is using his own body to come back to the present moment. So this is kind of an eye-opening, because so far he is living in a mind-made world, kind of a dream world. Now he is trying to come out of that dream world and to live in the present moment and to live in the reality. So this reality is still not the sort of a very refined or very perfect reality, but at least it is not something mind-made. It is not something entirely imagined world, but at least it is something he is really experiencing at this very moment. So using his own body, now he is trying to come back time to time to this world. Now if he is continuing this practice, now the frequency may increase. Now previously, suppose he is doing while he's walking, he could only come to the reality or to experience the reality only 10 moments. But later, because of his dedication, suppose he is continuing his practice, now he can be in the reality for say 20 moments, then 50 moments, 100 moments, 200 moments. So likewise, more and more instances he is now coming to be in the present moment. He is experiencing the present moment. More and more he is establishing mindfulness in the present moment. Now, as he experienced mindfulness, as he was able to establish mindfulness, now kind of an opening happens in his mind, where rather than thinking about something, rather than imagining about something, now he is trying to directly experience something. Sometimes we call it as abhinya, where some now give emphasis to this direct experience. Rather than the conceptual experience, rather than building up upon the experience, now he is trying to be with this normal, very fundamental experience, very basic level of experience without building up upon it, without constructing upon it. So he is trying to keep this very simple, fundamental, basic level of experience as it is, without constructing on it, without forming on it, without allowing the mind to make a story on it. So he is trying to keep the mind fairly quiet and trying to directly connect with this very fundamental level of experience. So this is another paradigm shift in his mind, in his life. Because so far he couldn't stop there. Rather, immediately once he experienced something in this moment, he started to think about it. He started to proliferate about it. He started to shift to an entirely different world from that experience. Now he lost this world. Now again in the dream world. Again in the mind-made world. In order to avoid shifting to this mind-made world, now again and again he is coming back to the present moment. Whenever mind drifts to the outside, whenever mind distracts outside, he mindfully take it back. Again, mind drifts to the outside, again he mindfully take it back. So likewise, it's a sort of a struggle at the beginning, because mind has never trained to be in the present moment. So without giving up, so he is continuing his practice. Now after a while, mind starts to stay in the present moment. Now, suppose he is doing some mindful walking. There his mind stays more and more with the mindful walking, with the walking. So basically the the bodily experience and the mental experience become harmonized or become fairly synchronized. So there's a bodily experience happened right at this moment, and the mind also experiences the same thing. Without going into the past or without going to the future, mind also well synchronized, well harmonized with the present experience. Now this is where he is now trying to further develop. Suppose now he is able to establish mindfulness, now his mind is not wavering, fairly concentrated on the present experience. Now Buddha does not stop there. He asks us to carefully observe really what is going on, to really investigate the present moment experience. So this is where the wisdom comes to the picture. So now this yogi, this practitioner, is fairly trying to observe the reality, trying to examine the reality, investigate the reality. So as a result of this continuous investigation, his mindfulness further refines and the clear comprehension further improves. And as a result, various insights are possible. So he may understand this is not something one component or one object, but this is kind of a made up thing. This is sort of an assembly of various things. Say for example, now he is looking at the chair. Now when he is looking at the chair, he understands this is, even though I typically recognize it as a chair, it is a sort of a made up thing. It was made with various wooden blocks, and there are maybe other plastics or other cushion or etc., nails, and various other components are used in order to make this chair. Then we call it a chair. There is no real chair. Now his mind entirely changed. Say for example, if we consider a vehicle, if we take four wheels, rims, engine, a body, steering wheel, gearbox, maybe the petrol, seats, etc. So we take all these various components and we assemble them in a particular fashion, in a particular style. And then it has the capacity to move once we ignite, once we supply the petrol, and then it starts to move. So then we call it a vehicle, a car, a bus. So accordingly we can understand it's a kind of a accumulation of various components. It is not something a one unit, but rather it is made up with so many small components. So the previous compactness view is now going to be broken, and he has a kind of a assembly view. It's a kind of a accumulation of view. Yeah, everything is sort of an accumulation. Everything is sort of an aggregate. Everything is sort of an assembly, not a single unit. Now, even this chair is something like that. So this chair is also a combination of various wooden parts, wooden blocks, and they were fixed together using various nails. And maybe the sitting part is fairly covered by a cushion. So likewise, he understands these various components, and once they come together, we call it a chair. Now this is the way his mind is growing in the insights. Now he has this kind of an insight. So this is one way, fairly mature insight, when compared to the typical worldly being's perspective, worldly being's perception. So he immediately takes this as a chair. I need it, I love it, I want to have it, etc. But the trainee actually have recognized this as a chair, but he now has a further understanding about this chair. This chair is not a single thing, it's a kind of a assembly of various components, and then we call it a chair. It's a concept that we call it a chair. Now his mind has fairly changed. Now according to the same situation, same scenario, we can look at various other things. Suppose he is looking at the tea. When he talks about the cup of tea, so what is this cup of tea? The hot water is there, then it is included in a cup. That cup is also made up with say porcelain, and the tea is added with the sort of this tea powder. So likewise, there are various combination of various ingredients, and ultimately we call it a cup of tea. There is no a real essence here, but it's a kind of a combination of various ingredients. So likewise, he can understand many different other experiences according to this view. Now he is breaking his compactness view. So this is one part of our practice. So when we consider something as a unit, as a thing, a single thing, then we easily get caught up with a personality view. We easily get caught up with a compactness. We easily consider he is a man, she is a woman, it is a dog. So likewise, we typically refer our words, sentences, communication, and we recognize them as single thing, something existing. But if we little penetrate this view, there we can understand it's a kind of a combination of various components, maybe various bodily parts. And as a result, we call or we give it a name as a man, as a woman, as a dog, as a cat, as a snake. So likewise, different names are given just for the communication. So these are the language coming to the picture. These are the concepts coming to the picture. And now, suppose he is further continuing his practice. Now he is trying to further scrutinize the experience. Now he understood now this so-called, say, Patavi Dhatu, the earth element, is not a kind of a single thing. It's a combination of so many components. Now he is trying to further analyze or further scrutinize this whole experience. Suppose he is taking Dhatu Manasikara, we are the elements related practice, and he is making a walking session, mindful walking, and there the mind is well established on the walking, and there when he is experiencing various earth characteristics, say stiffness, hardness, softness, heaviness, lightness, etc. Now he is trying to recognize them into that basic level, using those fundamental levels. He is not trying to make a story out of that, make a concept out of that. Now he is limiting or he is restraining himself to this very fundamental basic understanding. So his whole view is now fairly simplified, fairly refined, and as a result he may understand. So on top of this fundamental experience we are building up, we are constructing. How about if we stop this construction? How about if we leave aside this construction? How about if we simply experience the fundamental characteristics? Now he is trying to experience this fundamental characteristics. Now the whole experience, say when he is doing mindful walking, so his legs are touching the ground. Now he can recognize the stiffness as stiffness, hardness as hardness, softness as softness. Say, if we go to the other elements, say the dryness as dryness, or heat as heat, cold as cold, movement or motion as the motion, vibration as vibration. So likewise, very fundamental level experience he is trying to now recognize. So more and more he try to recognize those fundamental experiences, element characteristics, he may understand this whole body is nothing but these kind of various characteristics. And not only that, even the outside is a complete manifestation of these four elements. And we, for the easiness of communication, for the comfort of communication, we have given various names, and there we have sort of trapped. So how can I sort of come out of this trap and be in the very fundamental level of experience without trying to proliferate on that. Now he is trying to develop this kind of an understanding. And this is where actually the path coming to the situation where now he is developing this as a way of life. So he can't stop this whole thing immediately because the typical habitual proliferation is so powerful. Now he is again and again trying to restrain himself. So this is what I am trying to interpret here in this picture. Now this yogi is now perceiving the chair, but he may have very many ideas about it, because he also has some preconditioning, and the mind may tempt to do such proliferation. Now he is restraining himself. Now he says he should not conceive himself as earth. Now when mind is trying to conceive, now he is trying to restrain himself, so don't do that. So this is not the reality. This is a kind of a preconceived idea. This is a kind of a convention. This is a kind of a concept. So likewise he is restraining himself. He is again and again reminding the reality to himself. Because more and more the insights are also supporting his proper understanding. So more he associates those insights, a lot of wisdom is pumping to him. And as a result, whenever habitually his mind grasps, now he is trying to restrain the mind, telling, don't do it. Now this is a trap. This is a kind of a proliferation. This is a kind of a conceiving. So likewise, he is trying to avoid this conceiving. And suppose he is continuing his practice, and time to time he can even experience kind of a resting periods or the absence of conceiving, absence of proliferation. So his mind is fairly quiet, fairly clear, very simple, free from any concepts, free from conventions, not trapped in various conventions. And he can experience the peace of mind. He can experience the stillness of mind. So he get more and more wisdom, more and more understanding about things. Now his stillness of mind, clarity of mind, simplicity of mind, spaciousness of the mind helps to further strengthen his right view. But still, because of the habitual tendencies, again and again his mind may drift and try to again trapped in the typical conceptual way of thinking. But he restrains himself. He again and again restrains himself. He says, okay, patavito ma manyi, patavi meti ma manyi. So likewise he is giving a sort of a kind of a advising himself, instructing himself, don't do it. Come back to the present moment. Don't go to the past. Don't just proliferate about the past. Don't just imagine about the future. Don't just lost in the experience. Just try to be mindful. So likewise, again and again, he's sort of advising himself. So this becomes his kind of a practice. This is the training. This is how he's training himself. And suppose his whole experience further continues, his practice further continues, and he may now understand, as I said, certain restful periods, sort of absence of concepts, absence of proliferation, absence of thinking, and he may even understand, so this mind can stay still, this mind can stay quiet, this mind having thoughts is not essential. There's a whole way of experiencing, whole way of awareness, without thoughts, without constructs, without mental formations. So the mind is quiet, mind is peaceful, mind is clear, without formation, without mental constructs. And he may understand whatever the physical components or whatever the physical phenomena have the nature of arising and passing away. They come and go. they come into the picture due to various causes, and momentarily they pass away. And similarly, there are various feelings. They arise due to causes, and instantly they pass away. Similarly, there are various perceptions. Due to various causes, they come into the picture and they immediately pass away. And due to various tendencies, various habits we construct in the mind, mental formations, verbal formations, or various formations come into the picture. And once we stop this construction, then they too pass away. So all the other knowing part or the cognition part, that also happens again and again, but that is also momentary. They also arise and pass away. So there are various insights are now arising in his mind. So wisdom is further developed. And if it is coming to more developed or to its culmination, so there are possibilities that the mind become utterly free, extremely free from all the grasping of all the holdings, because the mind hold things when he thinks, when he perceives that, oh, here I am referring he as to the mind, when the mind hold things, when it perceives that it is good, it is sort of permanent, it is pleasurable, and it has some inner core, inner essence. But when it understands there is no core here, everything happens due to various causes and conditions, not in the control of oneself, and can't find lasting happiness here, and again is so transient, so there is no necessity of holding it, no necessity of grasping it. So as a result, the letting go starts to happen, relinquishment starts to happen. So when the relinquishment has happened, the mind becomes more free, more and more wisdom is there, more and more letting go is there. So mind may experience complete sort of a freedom. That also may be sort of temporary, because still the fetters are available, asava anusaya is still available. So therefore, once they again come into the picture, again mind go and grasp. But at least for limited time, at least for short time, this yogi now experience complete freedom of mind. Now, when those kind of insights are coming to the picture more and more, so his understanding further developed, and his realization further strengthened, and as a result, he now can recognize very clearly how mind go and grasp. What is the perception about various other things? Now we can take various other experiences or various these other components to the picture, other concepts to the picture. Now suppose he is thinking about various gods. Suppose you are believing in a god. In Sri Lanka, there are many gods. Kataragama god, Vishnu god, and many different gods are there. Those have come from various other beliefs. So people have various perceptions about these gods. So when this trainee is considering his mind, so he may understand this is a kind of a perception. This is a kind of a view I have based on the various cultural conditioning. So why not I free my mind from these constructs? Why not I simply keep the mind very simple without these beliefs? Now he is fairly cleansing his mind. He is directing his mind. And he has the clear understanding about the Buddha's teaching. And he gives more prominence to that Buddha's teaching. He is not afraid of sort of discarding various traditional or conventional way of thinking, because he has now fair confidence of the Buddha's teaching, because he has himself experienced the clarity of mind. He himself has experienced the stillness of mind, complete freedom of constructs, complete freedom of concepts he has experienced by himself. So more and more this mindfulness practice really show him the path. So that is why in the Satipatthana Sutta, where Buddha mentioned, if one properly practice Satipatthana, one result is the clear understanding of the path. clear understanding of the Noble Eightfold Path. So he understand, okay, this is the path to go. This is the way of practice. This is the correct way of practice. So more and more, his practice become confident. So he doesn't want to ask from someone to get a certification. Rather, his own practice is giving enough confidence that he's going in the correct path. And when it comes to, say, various other concepts, so how about various Arupa world? So he may understand, I mean, this may be possible by going through various, Arupa Jhana. And that is also a temporary conditioning of the mind. So you are trying to condition the mind using an absorption, and till the strength of that absorption is available, so the mind may stay in that world. But after that, again may come back to the lower realms. So this yogi, this trainee, is now fairly sort of broadening his understanding about various concepts. And he is not grasping even these subtle constructs, even these subtle concepts. Because at the beginning, as a typical mundane person, his mind has grasped, say, the typical worldly things, say, chair as a chair, table as a table. And then his view changed. This chair is a conditioned component, or kind of a constructed furniture, or it's a kind of assembly of various parts, components. Now he has sort of penetrated that compactness view. And further, when he sort of understanding or developing various insights, he may understand this is something made up with this earth element. The majority is earth element, so they have the nature to arise and pass away. So his understanding is further improved. As a result, his mind stop grasping, stop sort of holding things, stop clinging to things. Now though he sees a chair, he can leave it aside. Rather than having a second thought about it, he can recognize this as a chair in a conventional level if it is necessary, or in a more penetrative level if it is necessary. And his mind is unshakable. His mind become more detached from this whole experience, and he may see things, but he can stop seeing as at the scene. He may hear things, and he can stop hearing what is heard onto that level without making a story out of what is heard. He may sense various things, and he can still stop at the level of sensed. Various thoughts may come into the mind, and he can recognize those as merely thoughts without constructing upon them, without proliferating upon them, without allowing the mind to be caught up with those thoughts. So the thoughts may not last for a long time, but thoughts may fade away fairly quickly, and more his mind stay in the sort of a stillness. More and more the mind may stay in a quietude and free from inner chatter, free from proliferation. So likewise, his mind is further growing. And then if we consider the last concept, what is Nibbana? So how a trainee may recognize Nibbana? So this is an interesting question. Now, a worldling may have one idea or different ideas about Nibbana. So Nibbana is something beautiful. I may attain Nibbana after the death. I have to do various meritorious deeds to attain Nibbana. So Buddha has attained Nibbana. Arahants have attained Nibbana. They may be there. I also can join with them. So there may be so many views about Nibbana. On the other hand, if we consider a practitioner, he too might have started his practice according to these type of various thoughts, various concepts. But later, more and more, his view about Nibbana also may start to refine. So more his clear view, more his right view is improved. Accordingly, the view about Nibbana also going to be changed. It is not the Nibbana that we thought at the beginning of our practice may be available after, say, 1 year of practice. So his idea or his understanding about Nibbana has changed. And after another year of practice, his understanding about Nibbana has again changed. So the goal about his practice, the whole objective about his practice also going to change, going to mature. So therefore, so the understanding or the view about Nibbana in a trainee, in a Seka Puggala, also is quite different, maybe quite different from a typical worldly person. So I think with that, I can conclude today's teaching. So I now like to open the session for questions. So because these are fairly interesting subjects we are talking today. So if you have any question related to today's teaching, or if you want to clarify any other doubts, so I welcome that and open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And for any new friends that's joining us, I see someone has already raised their hand. So you may raise your hand to ask your question directly, or you may also send it anonymously via the chat. So I'd like to invite the first person, Chitra Devi, to please ask your question and unmute your microphone.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, now this was very beautifully explained, so thank you. Now my question is, this sort of investigation that the trainee undergoes is usually once he gets into a good level of samadhi and beyond, and is that the stage when he goes investigating and breaking up everything and seeing things in a clear way? Is that correct, or can we do it in a normal day life as ordinary doing ordinary things like cutting vegetables or looking at water or whatever? Can we break these things up into the way that you suggested, and can we get insights? Thank you.
Yeah, I think we, rather than waiting till we become real noble person, actually we can use all these techniques. There is no harm in using them. And actually, as a typical practitioner, so we are learning. We are understanding various techniques and we are trying to apply them. And I mean, it is not that immediately we become really accomplished in this practice. Rather, slowly, slowly, we are applying these various techniques. And as you said, suppose when you see something, so without grasping it as one unit, one single unit, if we can recognize this is a combination of various components, so that may reduce grasping. That may give a sort of better understanding about our experience. So therefore, application of these insights in day-to-day practice or day-to-day living is welcome. There is no harm in doing like that. But on the other hand, we have to balance it. Now say you are talking with someone. So internally you may have an understanding about this person, maybe five aggregates and etc. But when you are talking to him, so we have to live in the conventional level. We cannot basically completely forget about the convention. We have to tell, I mean, we have to talk with him using his name and using various, say, conventional realities, conventional terms, and that is all right. But only thing is that we are not too much lost in it. We have some understanding about the temporary application of these terms. We are not really completely lost in these terms. But for the easy communication, for easy, say, living with others, so we may be using these conventions. And on the other hand, internally, inside, we may have some deeper understanding.
So one thing now, when we are meditating and we reach a certain level of samadhi, and then in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha talks about the refrain, the Udayavaya and the Ajatabahidya, So can you explain a little bit at that level as well, please?
Sure. So that's why, say for example, one is practicing, suppose we'll take rising and falling. Now he is experiencing rising of the abdomen, falling of the abdomen. Initially he may thought, okay, this is my abdomen rising, my abdomen falling. But later, as his mindfulness refines, he loses all these labels. He now sort of don't put the term I or abdomen or tummy or whatever it is, and simply he has a direct experience. He removes all these unnecessary labels, all these mental constructs, all these man-made words, and he simply try to directly connect with the experience. Now he has certain series of movements in one direction and another series of movements in another direction. Series of rising, series of fallings, in other way. Now further he refines his understanding, further he refines his clear comprehension, sampajanya. As a result, he may understand, okay, this even a minute rising has a beginning and very momentary existence, and then it immediately passes away. And if it comes to another minute rising or minute falling, it has the nature to arise and momentary existence and then immediately passes away. Actually, this momentary existence is also subject to change. It is not sort of existing permanent, rather from the beginning, from the very beginning to the end, it is constant change. Constant change is happening. That's why Buddha is telling, Uppado panyayati, vayo panyayati, titassa anyatattam panyayati. There's a arising, there's a passing away. In between, there's an incessant, continuous change is available. So this is how a yogi may experience if he properly refine his mind and he properly put his concentrated mind to this phenomena. So this phenomena show that behavior. Whatever the phenomena, it may be a physical phenomena, it may be a feeling, it may be a perception, it may be a thought, whatever it is, have this nature. And more he observe it within himself, the same thing he can inferentially understand outside. So actually at the beginning we do it ajjata, internal. So he may apply it to the whole bodily experiences, to various feelings, and to various thoughts, and various perceptions happening in the mind. Maybe the wholesome thoughts, unwholesome thoughts, hindrances. So he's applying, he's observing various phenomena, everything internal. But later, as his insights are maturing, he may understand that the same thing happens outside as well. Same body phenomena is available in someone else's body, same feelings are available in someone else, and same way of mental constructs are happening in someone else's mind. So inferentially he can understand, okay, this is the situation not only inside but also to the outside. So this is how this rising and passing away, samudaya vaya, come into the picture, and again ajjata bahiddha come into the picture, and more this sort of understanding growing, so the grasping going to be reduced. Because when we give more emphasis or more value to internal things, then we grasp internal stuff. When we give more value, more emphasis to outside things, then we grasp outside things. But when we understand everything is subject to arising and passing away, everything is so transient, everything is nothing but four elements if we consider only the physical part, and if we consider the whole experience, it is nothing but Nama Rupa. So likewise, if we apply these insights to the whole picture, to the whole experience, then there is nothing to grasp. Nothing is worthy of grasping. Then the mind starts to let go. Then the mind starts to relinquish. And now the mind may experience more and more freedom. More and more freedom from concepts. more and more freedom from proliferation. So the mind is more clear, more still, more quietude is there. So his spiritual understanding may be growing daily, because daily he is training himself. So that's why it's a very beautiful term, actually, the seka. The translation is trainee. So he's training himself, because the habitual tendencies may sort of invite him to grasp, may request or ask or propose him to grasp, but he's training himself. He's restraining himself. So this is a beautiful way of analyzing the whole picture, and it is very, interestingly showing in this sutta. Back to you.
So Bhante, from what I understand, and please correct me, if this sort of investigation is more clear when we are in that samadhi state. It's more, the clarity is sharper, and also it is easier to get insights. Would you agree with me, Bhante?
The samadhi, the term samadhi has different meanings. Say, when we consider the vipassana, so samadhi here is the enough concentration to see this phenomena as it is. It is not sort of any absorption, but the mind is not wavering. Now suppose if you want to focus microscope, so you have to focus it properly, and then it has to be fairly steady, and then only you can properly observe it. So similarly, if you want to properly observe a feeling, so your mind has to stay on that feeling for a long time. It is not that the feeling is lasting for a long time, but you have to direct your mind very closer to that experience for a long time. Then only you can really have a good picture about the feeling. So how many feelings are there, how they are behaving, and all these things are only available to you. Only you can keep your attention there for a considerable period of time. So these are the facilities, or these are the requirements that we need. So these requirements, we can say, is presenting by samadhi. And when such facilities or such prerequisites are satisfied, then we can observe feelings properly, and how these feelings behave give us various insights. It is not that we are trying to pump insights to the mind or to borrow insights from outside, but rather this very quiet observation give us our own insights. I hope you understood it properly. Now, we have heard Buddha's teaching. We have heard that things are impermanent. But that is only a superficial knowledge. But here, what we are trying to do is, we are keeping our mind fairly concentrated, fairly quiet, free from any conditioning. And we are carefully observing some phenomena, what is in front of us. Then how this phenomena behaving? So that really gives us the insight. So if it is behaving in a particular fashion, in a particular way, so then we understand, okay, this has the nature to arise. This has a nature to quickly pass away. So, and then you observe another phenomena. That too has the same nature. And you observe another phenomena. That too has the same nature. And then you can recognize this is a kind of a universal pattern. It's a kind of universal characteristic. Impermanence is a universal characteristic. This transience is a universal characteristic. And everything is subjected to this kind of a transient nature is a universal characteristic. And not having a core there, not having an essence there, not having any essence in anything, is a universal characteristic. So likewise, through this continuous observation, one may have various insights.
Yes, Bhakti, I understood. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. So the next question is, Bhante, please explain how disciples sees diversity and unity.
Ah, fine. So this unity, diversity, those are actually fairly mind-made concepts. Fairly based on the self-view. So various other religions basically think there is a self, maybe a small self inside a being, and there may be a sort of a huge self, almighty self outside. So if we practice certain sort of a religious practice, religious ritual, so this small self can become united with this outer self, outer big huge self. So one can be united with this outer self. So this is where the mind, so now suppose till the mind has various diversified views, various other perceptions, you can't come to this unity. But when you are sort of removing all these distractions, so the mind become unified, mind become one single thing. So there, in those other religions, they say, okay, now you have become that. Now you have become that, united with that big self. So this is a kind of a view they have. So say for example, say there is something called Brahma, and say a human being has developed some sort of a spiritual practice, so one can become with that Brahma. One can become united with that Brahma. So there's a kind of a union. There's a kind of a unity. But on the other hand, in the Buddha's teaching, Buddha doesn't talk about such a creator God. Buddha doesn't talk about any sort of a self, even within ourselves or even outside. Nothing is self. So, but that is also a gradual understanding. But we can't apply such a very mature, advanced sort of a teaching to our very basic level of practice. Say suppose someone is still killing, stealing, involving various sexual misconduct, lying, and all these the typical, very mundane worldly habits are there. So now he has to become a good person first of all. At that time we have to give him a sort of a self view. We can't say there is no self, so you can continue all these bad things. Because if we simply apply this no self there, then he may argue, okay, if I am doing unwholesome things, why I have to be bothered? There is no self. But that is not the proper way of putting the teaching. Rather, first of all, one has to become a good person. So there we still operate the self view. So basically in the morality level, the sealer, we can say there is a self. So one become a good person, one become a sappurisa. So afterwards, this sappurisa is now trying to develop a concentration, a samadhi, a concentrated mind. Still he has the self-view, because that may give him motivation. So he has the motivation that I have to be free from samsara, I have to become a sotapanna, I have to become an arahant. So likewise, the self-view is there. Later, when he starts to develop insights, only the self-view going to be penetrated. Only the non-self teaching may be utilized. So therefore, the Buddha's teaching has a sort of a gradual application. And we, on the other hand, we can say there are various tools available, and these tools have to be properly used. And we should know where to be used. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. The next question, I assume that a certain amount of intelligence is needed to approach the practice in the way you suggested. The Buddha also mentioned the same, I believe. A total novice with little conventional education and wisdom may find it more difficult to tread the path. Am I correct?
I think we should not, knowledge is good, but we have to use it as a tool. We should not be entirely get caught up in the knowledge. Now, say for as human beings, as worldly beings, say people actually have to learn sort of various subjects. Say you go to a college, you go to a university, so you have various subjects to learn. So this is in a way useful for our day-to-day living, to deal with others, to earn something, to do a occupation. But the important thing is, when it comes to the Buddha's teaching, the mindfulness practice helps us to sort of disengage from this whole concepts. Keep the mind separate from all these concepts. Typically what happens is we don't know that. Typically our mind is fairly trapped in those concepts. We can't think out of that. We can't think out of that boundary. So we have become a poor victim of all that what we have learned. So various things are available to learn, this subject, that subject, scientific subjects, art subject, commerce subjects, whatever it is. So as we learn, so our mind becomes fairly filled with so many perceptions, so many signs, and we get trapped there. But the mindfulness practice helps us to go out of this trap, to be free from this trap. And then one has the skill to maintain himself when it is necessary to be free from these concepts, and when it is useful, he is using these concepts. Suppose as a practitioner, so you come, you stay at home and you do your practice. At that time you keep your mind entirely free. And now you go to the job, and there you have to deal with others, you have to take all the concepts, you have to consider the, say, stock market, you have to consider the, say, price, you have to consider various, commercial values, commercial terms, and you are utilizing them. But internally you know they are all merely concepts. They are all merely helping to deal with others, to properly do the job in a satisfactory manner. But that's it. That's the limit of it. There is no core, there is no essence, there is no reality in themselves. So this is how Buddha very beautifully mentioned in the, the Dedha Vitakka Sutta or Vitakka Santana Sutta. Both are dealing with the Vitakka, both are dealing with thinking. So where the practitioner has the ability to master thinking. When it is necessary, he can think. When it is not necessary, he can stop thinking. That's the beauty. So thinking, constructing, conceiving, using the language, are certain skills we have, and we are using it skillfully. But when we understand their limitations, but on the other hand, when we want to completely remove them and keep the mind with the proper way, with the proper view, correct view, you can simply understand all these views, all these constructs, all these concepts are merely concepts, and they are very limited, they are man-made, and you can keep your mind utterly free, completely free, and there you can stop thinking. So there's a pure awareness is possible, available, and the mind is fairly clean, clear, free from mental constructs. And so there you experience the, say, Buddha's teaching. There you experience the more, valuable insights of the Buddha's teaching.
Thank you, Bhante. And next, I'd like to invite Kumudini to please ask your question directly. Kumudini, you'll have to unmute your mic.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante, for your explanation.
Yeah.
Regarding this. My question was regarding the same regard, the question that the other lady asked. But what I understood was that these theoretical knowledge of these things is not insufficient. You have to get a experiential knowledge. in when you meditate and so on. Isn't that correct, Amarpante?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
That's why. So that's why in this explanation, now in the previous one, Pataving Patavito Sanjanati. The term was Sanjanati. But here, in the training, in this second, what we have discussed today, the term is Abhijanati. So that is where the direct experience comes into the picture. So it is not a kind of a borrowed knowledge. It is his own
exactly.
direct experience. So that is where the practice is extremely important. So all this, actually what we have discussed is still in the superficial level. But you yourself have to put yourself into the practice, and then only the term Abhijanati, the direct experience is direct experience is the most important.
In other words, just by studying these different steps as you have given it here is insufficient. You have to sort of meditate and analyze. And
definitely.
It's through meditation, I believe, that you could put correct.
Yeah,
that
actually.
That was my question, Bhante.
Yeah. So,
I must say that I enjoy your explanation very much. Thank
okay.
you so much.
Yeah. So basically, so that is why, in order to recognize chair as a chair, so that even a child can do. Even in this level, so he recognized chair as a chair. So that is a typical Sanjanati. So that is basically according to his conditioned mind. So basically he perceives there is a chair. So for him there is a chair, there's a permanent chair. That is a true chair. There is something is there. So his mind get colored immediately, his mind get occupied about various views about this chair. Now that is a typical mundane kind of understanding. But on the other hand, when it comes to the trainee, so he also may see a chair, but there's a difference. So you can't immediately apply it to the outside. Better he do it internally first. So that is where we say trying to simplify our whole experience and apply it internally first. Say when he is experiencing hardness, so he recognizes hardness. So when he is experiencing softness, he recognizes softness. When he is experiencing vibration, movement, all these various sort of phenomena, he is trying to recognize from his own direct experience, not from the book, from his direct experience. And more he experiences like that, now his whole physical being, he can recognize as a manifestation of all these characteristics. Nothing but these four elements. Now, as his insights mature, then now he can inferentially put that understanding to the outside as well. So, all the beings, what we say, inanimate things are made up with these four elements. Now, with that understanding, with such understanding, now suppose he is looking at a chair. Conventionally, he has the capacity to recognize this as a chair. But on the other hand, he has the capacity to look at this chair in many different ways. First way is to recognize this is not a single thing as a unit, rather it's an assembly of various components. When they come together and we assemble it in a proper form, we call it a chair. So the name chair is a concept that we have given. It's a name that we have given to something which is assembled. So the compactness view is broken. So this is one level of insight. So that is also fairly powerful insight. And on the other hand, if he has his own experiential knowledge about the elements, so that also can be applicable to this to the chair. So there also he can understand, okay, these are nothing but four elements. So the grasping is reduced, the proliferation is reduced, so he can simplify his whole experience without getting caught up in the experience. So further if he develops, so his mind starts to stay within, starts to avoid any grasping, and even though he may see a chair, that's it. There is no second thought. there is no mixing of the mind with the chair.
Yes.
So that's what the Buddha mentioned to Bahir, Ditte ditta mattam bhavissati. So you have to restrain yourself. Just seeing is just seen.
But then I have another question. Does this practice make you less emotional? Because I am getting... I am less emotional and I have been told that I am becoming cold. Is there something that can happen?
Actually, there are different ways we can explain it. One thing is, now, say for example, before the practice, suppose you are immediately become emotional, you start to cry and you start to say be extremely get involved with others and all this. This may be the typical nature of us. But on the other hand, as we develop the practice, so we step back and look at the thing. So this kind of a nature may be arising in ourselves. So in the mindfulness practice, one important thing is that the sort of the observation. So rather than immediately jump to the picture and get involved, now we have the capacity to step back and then to sort of properly investigate the thing. And if it is only required or only essential, we come to the picture. We put our hand. So then people may interpret that as now you have become cold, you have no emotions. Someone can sort of tell us. But, I mean, what happened to them is they don't have that break.
To be specific, I am taking care of my husband who is not well.
Uh-huh.
I take care of him very well, to the best of my knowledge and capability. But complains that I am not emotional with it. I find it difficult to be because I've been meditating a long time,
yeah,
and I'm seeing all this, and I don't know how to explain it to me. I don't think he will even understand.
Yeah, basically.
So I
can understand your situation. So basically, now say if you want to look after another person, certainly we may have some amount of patience, some amount of compassion. But on the other hand, if we become too emotional, we can't do it properly. Because we become too emotional, then we can't give the proper attention, we can't deal with the situation, we start to cry and we start to complain. And the whole thing we mess up. But on the other hand, when the clarity of mind is available, if he requires sort of tenderness, if he requires certain, say, good words, kind of compassionate words, that also can we do. But on the other hand, we have the sort of unshaken mind to not to get carried away with the emotions.
Right.
So I think that is necessary. Otherwise, I mean, you can't deal with yourself. And on the other hand, when the patient is, deteriorating, and we also, if we start to become really emotional, we also get depressed.
Right.
So,
thank you, Bhante. I was wondering whether I was doing things wrong or what was going on within me that I was becoming less emotional. Thank you very much for clarifying that.
Fine.
Tirvan Sarnai.
Bhante, we still have two more questions. Should we proceed?
Yes.
Okay. Dear Bhante, how do we understand viewing a movie in this regard?
Dealing a movie?
Viewing a movie.
Viewing a movie, right. So movie is a movie. So basically, again and again, if you keep that understanding, unfortunately, you can't enjoy the movie. Because if you want to enjoy a movie, you have to get utterly deluded. Then only you can shift to that movie world and you can enjoy it. You have to have entirely ignorant mind to really enjoy. But on the other hand, again and again, if you pump the insight, okay, this is a movie, this is a movie, this is a movie, then you are coming back to this world. You understand you are sitting in a theater. You are not in the 22nd century. Suppose there is a movie about 2030, there's a sort of aliens coming and they are attacking the earth, and then all these adventures are there. Now, if you lost yourself, you can completely be in the 2030 and you can really enjoy the movie, and you can really get shaken, you can really get upset, you can really cry, you can really get afraid because the aliens are coming in 2030. So you can enjoy it. But on the other hand, suppose in every 5 minutes you are reminding yourself, this is a movie, this is a movie, this is a movie, then you can't live in 2030. Again and again you are coming to 2020. So the enjoyment is less because you are coming back to the theater, you are coming back to the cinema, to your seat. You are sitting on a chair. You are sitting on a chair. And you are in this world. Now this is a movie. What you are looking at is not a reality. So therefore you have to select. Are you want to really enjoy a movie while being in delusion? Or you have to sort of recognize this as a kind of a construct, as a kind of creation of someone's mind, and it's a entirely a proliferation kind of a creation. So this is a kind of a, so there you can say someone else can complain, or you are not enjoying the movie. You can, you have the choice. Can you enjoy the movie, Jennifer?
Sometimes I can enjoy the movie. Sometimes I get involved as well, and then no longer enjoy the movie. I'd like to, for the last question, I'd like to invite Mahinda to please ask your question directly.
Dot point, he should not conceive himself apart from earth. Can you elaborate a little bit? It sounds like he still associates with the earth element.
No, actually, this is not merely the earth element. Wherever, when we are considering any of those earthbound matter, say chair, table, all these, there are so many components. We have earth predominant. And when it comes to water, there are so many things which has water elements predominant. Say you are seeing a cup of tea, you are seeing a glass of wine or whatever it is. And when it comes to air, when it comes to, say, heat. So all these are simply sort of, I have simply presented using one element here, simply taking the earth element. So everywhere, I mean, we are putting the language to communicate. We are putting the language to have a relationship with this outside world. So if we take this example, now when we see a chair, now we can have various relationships with the chair. So I want to have the chair. So we have the possessing relationship. So this is my chair. Still we have the possession. On the other hand, I hate this chair. This is not my chair. So I want to run away from this chair. So I am on the chair. So likewise, we have various, you know, the vibhakti in Pali, it is called vibhakti. I don't know the English term there. So anyway, so we are having various relationship with this subject object when we are experiencing something. So we are on it, we are away from it, we come out of it, and this is mine. So that's the possession, and we can call it. Say if you are looking at a child, you can call him. Son, come here. So there's addressing. So likewise, there are many ways the language is constructed in order to have a sort of a relationship with this chair, with this whatever the object. So all these are included here, even though only few have taken as an examples. All these language constructs are considered here, and everywhere when the mind is trying to have such a sort of deluded view, then he is instructing himself, don't get deluded, this is a concept, don't allow the mind to proliferate, don't do any papancha, don't get into stories, just stop at the seeing, just stop at the heard. So likewise the trainee is trying to restrain himself.
Thank you, Bhante. That is all for the questions for tonight.
Right, fine. So thank you very much for participation. Then we have spent almost 1.5 hours in discussing this sutta, and we were able to accumulate some merits. So we will share these merits with the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.